Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the StudyClix Explains Hamlet series. In this episode, StudyClix expert teacher Peter Tobin brings you through everything you need to know about the themes in Hamlet. Peter Tobin is an English teacher who has a YouTube channel called Mr. Tobin Leaving Cert English, where you can find loads of free videos covering different parts of the Leaving Cert English course. We've linked his channel in the description, and we can't recommend enough that you check it out and subscribe to get updates on new content he's making. In this episode, Peter is going to talk about the four prominent themes in Hamlet: revenge, appearance versus reality, death, and madness. Having a good understanding of the themes and giving a thoughtful analysis of their effect on the play is crucial to gaining those high marks in your exam. The next voice you're going to hear is Peter's, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
The theme of revenge is the driving force of the play. It's ironic that it's actually vengeance delayed over the five acts that causes this to be Shakespeare's longest play. The twin actions of Hamlet being charged by his father's ghost with taking revenge upon Claudius and his inability to take his revenge on him form the central structure. There are other characters who are seeking revenge throughout the play, and these characters both highlight Hamlet's reticence, but also forms of revenge that are justified and some that are not. Hamlet, Laertes and Fortinbras all have dead fathers who they set out to avenge. Fortinbras's father has died in the most legitimate way of the three, in a duel that he agreed to. Fortinbras's desire for revenge then is unlawful. Claudius approaches Fortinbras's uncle, the King of Norway, and the uncle tells his nephew to give up his desire to invade Denmark. This is a great contrast to both Laertes and Hamlet. Their causes for revenge are justified because their fathers were murdered. Laertes attempts to claim his vengeance immediately, in contrast to Hamlet. We see Hamlet agonise over his decision. He's unsure whether the ghost is really acting with good intentions, even after confirming his worst suspicions by seeing his uncle's reaction to the play within a play. He still prevaricates, philosophises and debates the idea of killing Claudius. Once he's decided to do it, he still waits. The scene where Claudius is at prayer is quite informative. Hamlet is unable, or unwilling, to kill his uncle because Claudius has just prayed and as such would die with a clear conscience and not go to purgatory. Hamlet reasons that this would not be adequate revenge. This highlights both Hamlet's cruelty and also what the quest for revenge can do to the person seeking it. Laertes' revenge is much more of an instantaneous but less thought out type. He is seeking to act out his vengeance in a violent way on whoever he can. It is Claudius' cunning and cleverness that allows him to refocus Laertes' desire for revenge onto Hamlet and away from himself. The contrast is between one who acts but in an unstructured, unexamined way and one who doesn't act at all, who delays because it is thought out to the nth degree. As with many of Shakespeare's plays, the theme of appearance versus reality is prevalent throughout. So what does it mean? Why does Shakespeare endow his work with this idea? Well, part of it is because it creates dramatic tension. The state of not knowing is important as a plot device. This is most commonly referred to as dramatic tension. We, the audience, know things that the characters don't. For example, we know that Hamlet suspects Claudius of his father's death, but Claudius is, for a while at least, unaware. This allows tension to build gradually, and every scene, with either character or both together, works to develop the tension until we get to the climax at the end of the play. But it's not just this deliberate dramatic tension where appearance and reality don't match. It's all over the play. At the beginning, the appearance of the ghost is in darkness, which emphasises the confusion of the situation. Claudius appears to be a good and competent ruler, but conceals the fact that he is the cause of the current woe in the kingdom. Hamlet later feigns madness, or perhaps is mad in a sense. Claudius and Polonius both employ spies to conceal their intentions and report back on Hamlet and Laertes. Even the play within a play is an elaborate deception, as well as the final scene when the plot to murder Hamlet with the poisoned sword tip is hatched. The end result of all this deception is twofold. There's the general sense of tension that we've already mentioned, but also a sense of fragility or imbalance. Nothing in the world of the play is what it seems, and so it makes sense that the characters are often on edge, none more so than Hamlet himself. He can't trust anyone, bar possibly Horatio. His childhood friends have turned into spies, his uncle has murdered his father, his mother's desecrated her husband's memory and jumped into bed with his murderer, and he's been given quests by a ghost that he is unsure of is his father or a malevolent spirit. Nothing in this play is what it seems. The theme of death is ever present in Hamlet. The play opens under its shadow, the death of the king, and ends with the stage littered with corpses. Even Fortinbras remarks at the end that the closing scene will be better suited to a battlefield. Throughout the play, there are constant references to death from multiple characters, as well as philosophical deliberations on death from Hamlet himself. So what's the purpose? Some critics have focused on the fact that the unknowable nature of what comes after death fascinated Shakespeare, and by extension, Hamlet himself. Remember, Shakespeare deliberately puts a ghost in the play. This is very much a Catholic idea that a dead person with unfinished business or an unclean soul will be forced to suffer in purgatory. The ghost then has unfinished business, namely the punishment of his murderer, before he can pass into the next world. What that next world looked like was a matter of speculation and fascination. As with many writers, poets, painters and others, trying to establish what happens after one dies is both impossible and enticing. This could be partly why the theme of death is so prevalent in the play. It feeds Shakespeare's fascination and wonder. There's also the idea of class and social position. Death is the great leveller. As is pointed out in the play, after death we are all the same. All bodies are feasted upon by worms and other creatures, regardless of whether one is a king or a beggar. This levelling is interesting because we see such stratification in society in all of Shakespeare's plays, Hamlet being no different. Shakespeare, generally in his work, reaffirms the worldview of kings at the top and beggars at the bottom. The great chain of being, with the rest of society's roles and functions ordered in between. In death, however, there is no longer any structure. Everyone is equal. Death, then, is like a release from the overriding structure and responsibility of this social chain. Hamlet struggles with this throughout the play, mediating on the meaning of life, whether or not people are actually happy to live or just afraid to die, whether suicide should be an option. Ultimately, Hamlet becomes resigned to the fact that death is inevitable. It is the death of all the main characters that allows order to be restored in the Danish court. So we see that equality is achieved through death, but in an interesting ironic twist, the system, the way society is organised, is reborn through those deaths. A new king takes the throne and the cycle begins again. Another theme explored in Hamlet is that of madness. One of the key questions in the play is whether or not Hamlet's madness is put on or real. Madness, or characters going or pretending to go insane, was a fairly regular feature of Shakespeare's works, especially the tragedies. It was often used as a way of deceiving or fooling other characters into certain actions or revelations. In Hamlet, then, we see that madness serves a similar function. Hamlet, according to himself and what he says many times to different characters, is pretending to be mad to sow confusion among the many spies and watchers who are reporting back to Claudius on his actions and condition. This antic disposition, however, strays into believable territory at times, further confusing the audience. At the beginning of the play, Hamlet appears to be in such a heightened emotional state that Horatio and the other men refuse to follow his orders, despite his position as the prince. He is deeply affected by, first, the death of his father and the remarriage of his mother. Added to this, the appearance of a ghost that burdens him with a task so hard that he can barely bring himself to consider it. It's no wonder that his mental state is strained. This is also before the adoption of the antic disposition. We can see then that Hamlet is predisposed towards madness, based on all that he endures. He is unable, however, to fool Claudius, who, throughout the play, is not convinced that Hamlet is mad. Similarly, when speaking to Horatio or the actors of the play within the play, he is clever, witty, and totally rational. There is no suggestion in these scenes that he is mad. His behaviour with Gertrude and Ophelia, the rash, impulsive and cruel taunts and comments, could be very easily explained away if we were to say that he was mad, but unfortunately I think that's too easy a get-out clause. There are aspects of his character that we must deal with and come to terms with without the explanation of madness, namely why he treats his mother and Ophelia so poorly. Ultimately, the aspect of madness when it comes to Hamlet himself is a disguise, a ruse that is used for protection and keeping vulnerable aspects of himself hidden. He may be very persuasive as a madman because he's a bit closer to it than others, but he is very certain in his explanations to other characters that it is something he is putting on. Unfortunately for Ophelia, though, her madness is quite the opposite. She suffers throughout the play. She is subservient to her father and her brother and obeys their commands. Hamlet, the one she loves, turns on her viciously and, to make matters worse, the suggestion that she has lost her virginity to Hamlet means that his rejection of her is a double blow. Her reputation is now destroyed as well as having lost her love. This is enough to prompt her madness. Whether she dies by accident or takes her own life, it's an obvious counterpoint to Hamlet's own feigned madness and total indecision.
That concludes our 8th episode. We hope that this analysis of the themes of revenge, appearance versus reality, death and madness has given you a deeper understanding of them and equipped you with lots of great ideas and phrases that you can use in your essays. Once again, if you enjoyed this, we would really encourage that you check out Peter's YouTube channel, Mr. Tobin Leave Insert English, which is linked in the description. Trust us when we say this is an incredible free resource for 5th and 6th year students. And we hope you stay tuned for more content like this.